Last week, we ran out of time, so we'll review a little bit of that and then jump back in. So today is going to be testing syllogisms by rules and then establishing conclusions. So if you remember from last week, we started the testing by rules. So the rules really, remember how we went through all the mood and figure, the form, the AAA1, AIO2, whatever, all those forms of syllogisms, and we said that of the, like 256 possible combinations you could make, there were only how many valid ones? 24 out of 256. So why are those 24 valid? They're valid because they follow these five rules that we're going to be testing them with. So that's what it really has to deal with. How do you get to those 24? It's because of these five rules. Alright, so the five rules for testing validity of a syllogism. If any of these rules are violated, then the syllogism is invalid. If the syllogism passes all five, then it's valid. So the ones that pass all five rules, those are your 24 valid forms of an argument. So rule number one, again in review, in at least one premise, the middle term must be distributed. And remember that distributed means we're going to talk about all of that category. So this would be the subject of an A statement, all S, that subject is distributed. In the no or E statements, both of the terms are distributed. And in the some are not, the O statements, the not is distributed. So it's talking about everything in that category. So rule number one says at least one of the premises, the middle term, must be distributed or talk about all of that category. Number two, if a term is distributed in the conclusion, it must also be distributed in its premise. So if the major term or minor term is distributed in the conclusion, then it also must be in the major premise or minor premise. It must also be distributed. It has to match. There's got to be that mirroring. Number three, or rule three, a valid syllogism cannot have two negative premises. Rule number four, a valid syllogism cannot have a negative premise and an affirmative conclusion. Rule number five, a valid syllogism cannot have two affirmative premises and a negative conclusion. All right, so we'll unpack all five of these as we go. But those are the five. So those five rules get you your 24 valid forms. Any of the ones that are invalid break one or more of these rules. All right, so compare the last three rules. So you see rule 3, 4, and 5. If you give them some thought, you should recognize an application of 3, 4, and 5. If a syllogism has a negative conclusion, then one of the premises must be affirmative and the other one is negative. So if you combine rule 3, 4, and 5, you basically get, if my conclusion happens to be negative, if it's a no SRP or some SR not P, if it's negative in the conclusion, then one of my premises is going to be positive and one of them has to be negative for it to even be valid. You should also, you guys got all those blanks. I guess I'm forgetting you got blanks.
Well, you read them again, please.
So that first point, compare the last three rules. So by the blanks, it says if a syllogism has a negative conclusion, so the blank is negative conclusion, then one premise must be affirmative and the other negative. So you should also see from rule 4 that if a syllogism has an affirmative conclusion or positive conclusion, then it must have two affirmative premises. So these last three rules, 3, 4, and 5, can be combined even more briefly to a denser rule, and this rule would read something like, the number of negative conclusions in a syllogism must equal the number of negative premises. So again, the number of negative conclusions in a syllogism must equal that number of negative premises. If we have a negative conclusion, we have to have one negative premise. If we have no negative conclusions, then we get zero negative premises, which is a typo on this next point we need to correct. It says, if a syllogism has zero negative conclusion, i.e., it has an affirmative conclusion, then it must have exactly, it should say, zero negative premises. So we've got to change that. It says 1 right now. It should say 0. If you have a positive conclusion, you cannot have... or if you have no negative conclusion, you cannot have a negative premise. All right, so let's break down these rules bit by bit. So in rule number 1 then, in at least one premise, the middle term must be distributed. This means that the middle term must be either the subject of an A statement. So remember, A is all... Let's write these down so we remember all of them as we go through this. All right, so what was my A statement?
All
S R P. Which one's distributed in that? Which term is distributed in an A statement?
P and no, S.
S, right? We want all of one category. All right, AE with an E statement.
Some SRC.
No, AE. So we're going across. This is no.
No
SRP. Which one is distributed in that?
Both.
Correct. Both are distributed. I statement is?
Some SRP.
Some SRP. P, which one's distributed in that?
Both are undistributed.
Both are undistributed. We have no distributed terms in an I. What about O?
Some S are not P.
Yes.
Which one's distributed in some S are not P?
P.
This one is distributed, right? Because no or not should be read as no. So it's talking about the whole category of P. So we're only talking about some of the category of S, but we're talking about everything in the category of P. So distributed is talking about that whole category, right? Because we're doing categorical logic. So it's the whole category, everything that should go into that category. So this is our distribution of terms. All right, so the middle term, back to rule 1, this means the middle term must be either the subject of A. Okay, so again, subject is S. It either needs to be a subject of A, or the predicate of an E, or the predicate, or subject or predicate of E, or the predicate of O. So, for our middle term has to fall in the subject here, the subject or predicate, of that, or here. So I have to have at least one of these statements in my premises where the middle term is in one of those positions. All right, so below is a small diagram showing the terms are distributed or undistributed in a categorical statement. So again, this is all review from last week. All right, so when you are examining a syllogism, the first rule is applied by looking at what type of statement the middle term is. For example, consider the following: all men are mortals. No mortals are angels. And then therefore, some angels are not men. Okay, so we have this one. The middle term, what's the middle term here?
Mortals.
Yeah, the middle term is mortals. How do we know that's the middle term?
It's in both premises.
Both premises, but not in the conclusion. So mortals is my middle term. Is mortal distributed in this syllogism? What about the first premise? Is it distributed in the first premise?
No.
No, it's not. Okay. Is it distributed in the second premise?
Yes.
It is. So, does this commit the fallacy of not distributing the middles?
No.
No, because I have at least one time it needs to be distributed. So, the middle term occurs in two statements. The first one is an A statement, right? And then we have an E statement. because in an E both are distributed, at least our middle is once distributed in this syllogism. So, no middle term. No, the middle term is not distributed in A because it is the predicate. So it's falling in that P, so it's not distributed in the first one. But it is distributed in the E statement because both are distributed. So the syllogism therefore passes the first test, which this is where we, I think, got to last week. So the rule is not broken. If the rule was broken, it is known as the fallacy of the undistributed middle. So if we had any other kind of statement in number premise 2 where it was not distributed, then this would be invalid as an argument. Okay? So that's rule number 1. So here's an example. Let's give another example here that we have. We have all men are created beings. Some created beings are angels. Therefore, some angels are men. Okay, so what is my middle term? Created beings. It's in both premises and not in the conclusion. Is it distributed in the first one? Which is an A statement, and it happens to be the predicate. So we're not talking about all created beings, so it's not distributed. And then if we say some created beings, are we talking about all created beings, or no of that category? No, so it's not distributed. So is this valid argument?
No.
Now, does it look like a valid argument when you just listen to it? Sounds like it makes sense, right? If you're just reading that, all men are created beings, is that true? Yep, all men are created beings. Some created beings are angels. Is that also true?
Yes.
It's also true. And then therefore, some angels are men. Is that true? If we equivocate on the term angels, some people will say angels mean the pastor of a church. If you look at Revelation, they'll claim that that's what that means. So if I switch my term from an angelic being to just saying a messenger, for example, then can I make that work? Yeah, but I've equivocated on my terms by doing so. So this is not a valid argument because I've actually changed what angel means, or I've allowed the possibility of changing what angel means by not distributing this middle term. So that's where like these rules come in play, because yes, it looks like it makes sense, or it could make sense, but really when I don't distribute my terms properly, and I get to angels in the conclusion, I've really changed what it could mean. And now I've committed another fallacy where I've equivocated on my terms. I meant one thing, I meant the angelic beings that are powerful and everything else in my premise, but when I got to my conclusion, now I've opened it up to more definitions of angel than just that. So that's like the behind the scenes of why some of these rules work the way they work. It's kind of like that advanced math. I can understand the practical application side, but how they got to these things, the guys who sat there and thought of this, sometimes is a little beyond what I'm able to do. That's why we have the rules, just to say, okay, if you don't understand how they got there, at least understand the rule and say, okay, here's the rule, I just follow the rule. Alright, so the middle term created being is not distributed in either premise, therefore this syllogism is invalid, and as it has an undistributed middle. If the middle term is undistributed in both, meaning that neither premise does it refer to all of its members, then no necessary connection is made between the premises. So, again, some of that implication stuff from back when we did the square of opposition. If I don't talk about all the things in that category, and I'm only doing some, there's no necessary implication. So if I say, some of you in this room are Christians, well, that doesn't necessarily mean that some of you are not. I'm only talking about certain. To make it more obvious, I say, you guys are Christians, right? That's some of the room. That doesn't mean anything about this side of the room. I'm not talking about this side of the room. I'm just talking about this sample of the whole room. So that's where if we don't distribute, now I'm talking about just this part of the room. This part of the room are Christians. Okay, well you could be too, but I don't care. I'm only pulling this side of the room for now. So that's where if you don't distribute something, And I'm not talking about all that category. There's no necessary implication. Now, if I say this whole room is Christians, now has that distributed to the whole sample, right? So then would it also be true, by implication, that this section of the room is Christian because the whole room is Christian? So that's a necessary implication. But if I just start with this and say this side of the room is Christian, it doesn't mean anything necessarily for the whole. The whole room could be Christian, or the whole room could be divided, half Christian, half not Christian. We don't know. So we can't make that inference just based on that sample. So, here's an example of where we commit the fallacy. So, we did that. Alright, next page. Rule number two. Are there any questions on rule number one? Tried to move a little fast because it's kind of a review from last week. Okay, rule number two. If a term is distributed in the conclusion, so if the conclusion has a distributed term, so if it's A, the S is distributed, E, both are distributed, or O, just the predicate is distributed, I have to distribute it in its premise. Now, what do I mean by its premise? If a term, right, what's the term? Either the subject or the predicate, right? We have two terms, subject, predicate. If the term is distributed in the conclusion, it must be distributed in its premise. So what do we mean by its premise?
Would that be the premise where the major
right.
term?
Right, so... Try to write down that.
Was that for that?
All right, if I have... Right, so let's say this one is my conclusion today. I have an O statement conclusion. Some S are not P. What one is my major premise?
A.
Or my major term, excuse me.
Whatever P is.
P, right? This one's my major. This one's my minor, right? So then, is there a major premise and minor premise that go along with those? Right? The major premise is usually your P1. Your minor premise is your P2. So, their premise, that means if this one is distributed, right? If this is my conclusion, this one is distributed, that means the major premise, it also has to be distributed. Now, this one isn't, so we don't really care. But for this rule, if this is my conclusion, some S are not P, that's distributed in the conclusion, it must be distributed in premise one. Okay, so this is, this rule is a result of a more general rule that in a valid syllogism, the conclusion cannot go beyond the premises. So what that means is, again, talking about the whole group. If in my conclusion, I'm talking about nothing in that whole group, is that broader than just talking about some of that group? So if I conclude that no one in this room is an atheist, but in my premise I say some of you are not atheists, or some of you are Christian. If I say some are Christian, does that mean that necessarily none of you are atheists just because I say some of you are Christian?
No.
So that's where I say, if my premise is some of you are Christians, and I'm only talking about parts, right? Some are, some SRP, some of this room are Christians. Does that mean I can conclude that no one here is atheist? I cannot. So that's where the conclusion would go further than what the premise was able to say. So we do this in speech all the time, right? In regular, this is one of the things that we regularly break in everyday language, where we'll know that something's true, like, oh, you know, some of you are Christians. Therefore, nobody's an atheist in here. Nope, not necessarily. It might be true. It may be true no one in here is an atheist, but it doesn't naturally follow logically that just because some of you are Christians, that none of you are atheists. So, our conclusion cannot go further than our premises allow. So, in terms of conclusion, refer to all the members of a particular class, i.e. its distributed term, then the term in its premise must refer to all the members of that class. So, if I want to say something about everyone in this room, I have to, or conclude something about everyone in this room, I have to say something about everyone in this room in one of my premises. I've got to be talking about the whole room first, not just part of the room. So this rule, or this rule can be illustrated by looking again at the first example on the rule number one. The conclusion is an O statement. Looking at our paradigm, we can see the predicate of an O statement is distributed. That term must therefore be distributed in the premise which it occurs. So when this rule is broken, it can have two names, depending on which term is not distributed. So if the predicate is distributed in the conclusion, but not in its premises, it's known as an illicit fallacy of illicit major. So the major premise is distributed in the conclusion, but not the premise. Therefore, or the term, excuse me, the major term distributed in the conclusion, not in the premise, it's the fallacy of illicit major. If it's the minor term that's distributed and then not in the premises, then it's the fallacy of illicit minor. So fallacy of illicit major, fallacy of illicit minor, referring to the term, the major term or minor term. Okay, so let's look at an example. Some rocks are granite. No granite is a sandstone. Therefore, some sandstones are not rocks. All right, so what's my middle? Granite. Is it distributed? Does it pass rule one? Yep, pass rule one. No granite, so that is distributed in the second premise. In my conclusion, is anything distributed? Rocks. Rocks is distributed in my conclusion, so that's my major term. My major term is distributed. Is it distributed in its premise? It is not, because we have some rocks. So we're only talking about a part of the category of rocks, but then when we get to the conclusion, we're talking about all the rocks. So, is this valid or invalid?
No.
It's invalid for what reason? What fallacy?
Illicit
major, because my major term is distributed, but it is not distributed in its premise. So, therefore, you see that the major term rocks is distributed in the conclusion, but not distributed in its premise. So it is invalid. So let's get another example here to do the other way around. So we have all textbooks are writings. Then we have all textbooks are books, and then therefore all books are writings. Alright, so what's my middle term? Textbooks. Is textbooks distributed in at least one of the premises?
Yeah.
It is in both. Alright, what is my major term?
Writings.
Is it distributed in the conclusion? No, it is not. So we don't need it distributed up here, which it is not. What is my minor term? Books. Books. Is books distributed in my conclusion? My minor term, are we talking about all the books?
Yep.
We're talking about all the books, so it's distributed. Is it distributed in its premise?
No.
So what have we committed? What fallacy?
Illicit minor.
Okay, so that's illicit major and illicit minor. All right. Questions on that?
I think the thing here that it sounds right.
It does sound right.
It sounds right to say all books are writings.
Right.
But technically, because of the way the premise is structured, it's and
right.
So, like, I think that's where people right. get tripped up.
That the problem is, yes, when all the premises sound true and we agree with the conclusion. For example, we talked about this one before. The conclusion was the King James Bible. Is the Word of God. Alright, so that's the conclusion. Do we all like that conclusion? Do we all agree with that conclusion? But the question is, did we arrive at that conclusion by valid means? Was our thinking correct to get to that conclusion? So the conclusion can be true, but our thinking was really bad in how we got there. How we reasoned our way there was bad. So it doesn't work. So if we go out in the marketplace, for example, to the atheists, and we say, hey, God is real, the Bible's true, the King James Bible is the Word of God, and then we tell them why, and our thinking is just totally bad, can they just dismiss everything we're saying on the fact that you don't even know how to think right? You're way off. That's not how things work. So yes, sometimes things look right, they sound right, but that doesn't make them true. So, again, we go back to just the spiritual side of things. Do we have an adversary?
Yep.
What is he described as? A lot of things. A deceiver, though, right? He's a liar and the father of it, right? What is the best lie that you can tell? As close to the truth as you can possibly get. Without hitting truth. So I want to get it absolutely butted up against truth as I can get with just one tiny bit of error. Because with truth, if it was a percentage, how percentage-wise do you need to be to get truth? 100%. It has to be 100% true to equal truth. There's no like, oh, 95 is close enough. So if I can get to 99.9% true, is that true? No, it's false. Like there is no wiggle room. It's either true or it's not true. So if I want to tell a good lie, I want to be 99.9% accurate. Because that's going to get the most people to go, okay, yeah, sure, we'll believe that. And then I can slowly degrade that over time.
Have you ever taken Satan's words to Eve in Genesis?
Sure. Yep. Yeah, well, yeah. Does Satan get very close to it and just question it a little bit? Yep.
Really, the rat poison is 99.9% good for the rat.
Right.
0.1% that killed the
rat. Right. But if I can get you all to move to 99% truth, and then that becomes the norm, right? That's the new truth. And then I can get you just 99% of that, and then 99% of that, over time. That's the thing is, the best warfare is a war of attrition. It's just a slow, methodic eating away of a culture until it's gone. And then I don't have to have a conventional warfare. If I can eat the culture away, and I can switch the norms, and I can switch the way they think, I don't have to fire a single bullet or drop a single bomb. I can change that whole country into what I want it to be just by changing the culture, by getting away from what they actually believe, what they follow. We see this happening today. A lot of the wars happening today are not conventional warfare. Now, there are some conventional warfare bombs being dropped and stuff like that, but most of it is a battle of ideas. And if I can change that culture to new ideas, new norms, I can slowly move it into a new direction without ever having to have like bloodshed. Now, usually that results in a lot of bloodshed once you get to certain ideologies, a lot more bloodshed than maybe a war would have done. But that's the best lie. So with these things, yes, sometimes they look good. They sound right, but they're only 99% right, which means they're wrong. And we can't accept 99% good sounding. We have to be 100% every single time. All right. Rule number 3. A valid syllogism cannot have two negative premises. So no syllogism that we make can have two negative premises. Any syllogism that has an E or an O statement as a premise has only E or O statements as the premises, is therefore invalid. So if we looked at all those possible combinations, anything that's OO, OE, EO, or EE, all of those are invalid. There are no valid ones that contain those combinations as your first two letters. So, one of the premises must affirm something. So, in your premises, you have to have at least one of your premises that says something positive about a category. You got to claim something positively about a category. You can't just argue from negatives. So, one of the premises must affirm something. If they are both negative, no valid conclusion can be drawn. If I just say negative statements, I can't get to a logically necessary conclusion about those things. Right? So sometimes, is it hard to define certain words? Are there certain words that are very hard to define? So a lot of times what we'll do is we'll try to define by telling what it's not. So I'll say like, okay, let's say time. Well, time's not a thing you can hold. Right? So am I starting to describe time by saying what it's not? Time isn't made up of particles that we can put in a bottle or whatever. Am I ever going to come to a really good positive definition of what time is by just telling you what it's not? Now, yeah, I'm canceling out things that it isn't, but I'll never get a really good conclusion about what it is until I start describing it positively. The same is true about any argument. I can't really make a good conclusion by just saying what I disagree with or what I don't think is true. I have to say positively, here's what this thing is. All right, so give you an example. So we have some Turks are not Muslims. And then we have no Hindus are Muslim. Therefore, some Hindus are not Turks.
So here again, it's true that some Hindus are not Turks.
That is true. Right? It's right. True that some Hindus are not Turks. Okay? The problem is, I'm only talking about... Well, that's okay. So, distributed middle. Let's start with rule one. What's the middle term?
Muslims.
Is it distributed somewhere?
The first one.
Yep, it's distributed up here because we're talking about no Muslims. All right? What is my major term?
My major term
is Turks. That's my major one. And is that distributed?
No.
It's distributed?
Oh, in the conclusion.
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it distributed up in the premise? Premise one?
No.
No, it is not. So it does violate that rule, right? So what fallacy was that?
Undistributed major.
Undistributed major. Okay, so Hindus, is that one distributed in the conclusion? No, but it is distributed up in its premise. But the problem is now I have two negative statements. Not Muslims and no Hindus. So this is violating that rule as well, rule 3. So this violates both rule 2 and rule 3. So it's got actual multiple problems with this.
I'm not familiar with all these terms. Muslim and Hindu are religious.
Yes.
Turks is from Turkey?
I think that's more of an ethnic group.
Yeah, ethnic group.
So we have an ethnic group and two religious groups.
Okay.
That's why it doesn't make sense because, yes, we're combining categories that don't really go together. That's what it's kind of showing is I have an ethnic group, some of this ethnic group, I'm not talking about all, some of this ethnic group have nothing to do with Muslims. The whole group of Muslims. Then I have a whole group of Hindu, which is a religion, no of this group are Muslim. And again, is this one distributed? Not here. Oh, yes, it is. So we have distributed. So none of this whole group of Hindus is any part of this group of Muslims. Now we're going to try to make a conclusion from this and say that some Hindus are not Turks. Now that's true that some Hindus are not Turks, but it's not really helpful at all, is it?
Like we could. It's also true that no Hindus are Muslims.
Correct. If they're technically Hindu.
Yeah.
But although Hindu, well, see, that's different. So under Eastern mysticisms like Hindu, all forms of religion are good. So You could be Hindu and Christian, or Hindu and Muslim, or Hindu and whatever, because they don't believe in Western logic as far as you're this or that. They think they're all good a lot of times. So, yes, because of their faulty reasoning, they think they can be something and not that something at the same time. But for us, Western logic, no, Hindus are not Muslims. They're not the same thing. But I'm also talking
about converting somebody.
Right, they might have been before, and again, that's where our terms would matter. So, like, let's say somebody grew up Hindu and became Christian later on, converted, but still refers to themselves as Hindu in a more of a cultural sense. Culturally, I grew up Hindu, that was my culture, that was, like, what I identify with as a child, so I'm never not Hindu, even though now I'm Christian. But again, now are we talking about the same term?
No,
because we've changed the term from the religion that you currently believe to a cultural identity.
Yeah.
So those are not the same thing. So this commits both of those. What's that?
I work with a guy that's like,
yeah,
Hindu and Christian.
Yes. Yeah. So again, and on that, on their system, they don't follow Western logic, or what we're doing, they call Western logic.
Right.
So they say, yes, you can be Hindu and Christian, or Hindu and Muslim, because all religions get you back to that same thing. They're all good. So, yes, if we don't apply logic, we can be all things and no things.
So they're like universalists?
Kind of. In a sense, yes, universally every religion is good and a way to a higher being. So they're all good paths, so to speak. They can all fit together, but yeah. All right, so it has two negative premises. Again, this is not going to give us a for sure conclusion. And that's what we want, is a for sure conclusion that comes necessarily from the premises, which this one does not. So it's only going to give us a maybe it's true, maybe it's not. So again, because we could do that, we could equivocate on Hindu. And we could say Hindu as a religion, as one term, and Hindu as a cultural identity in the conclusion. And
you could do the same with any religion.
Correct.
Christianity.
Correct. So that's where we can't use that argument, because it allows for that equivocation. All right, rule number four. A valid syllogism cannot have a negative premise and an affirmative conclusion. So if any of your premises are negative, either a E or an O in any of your premises, then you cannot have a positive conclusion. You've got to have a negative conclusion now. So the first thing is to do is determine the nature of the conclusion. If it is affirmative, an A or an I, then you cannot have an E or an O statement in the premise. So if I have a positive conclusion, I have to have only positive premises. But if I have a negative premise, that means my conclusion needs to be negative as well. I need two negatives, and only two negatives. So this syllogism, where am I? Yes, another syllogism here. Oh, man, I should have left it up there. Same one. All Turks, oh, it's slightly different. All Turks are Muslims. In this example, and no Hindus are Muslim, and then so therefore some Hindus are Turks. All right, so what's my middle term? We'll start with rule one. What's my middle term? Muslims. Is Muslims distributed in at least one of my premises? It is. Premise two has it distributed. What's my major term? My major term is Turks. Is Turks distributed in the conclusion? No, it is not. So it does not need to be distributed up top. Is my minor term distributed? Hindus. No, it is not in the conclusion. So again, we're not needing that to be distributed up in the premises. So then we go to rule three. Do we have two negative premises?
No.
I have one positive, one negative. So we're good there. Passes rule three. Rule four, it cannot have a negative premise and an affirmative conclusion. So is my conclusion affirmative or negative?
Negative.
It's affirmative, so that means what? It's invalid because of P2. So this is an invalid argument, and that would be called commit the fallacy or whatever, is the negative premise and affirmative conclusion. Very, very creative fallacy. So the fallacy of the negative premise and affirmative conclusion. So the one before it was very creative as well, if you didn't get that blank. The rule three, if it's broken, we say we have two negative premises. Very, very creative. Not easy to remember some of these because they're not very creative. Illicit major and illicit minor you can kind of remember because they have a little bit more creativity to them. Yeah, sounds better than saying the fallacy of the negative premise and affirmative conclusion. All right, so this is invalid. That would take out a whole swath of those possible ones. All right, rule five. I want to make sure, okay, yeah, we can erase it. All right, rule five. Is a valid syllogism cannot have two affirmative premises and a negative conclusion. Now again, some of these rules kind of all layer on top of each other, but if I have a negative conclusion, I have to have one negative premise, right? So if I have two positive premises, can I have a negative conclusion? No, because I need a negative premise for a negative conclusion. So the example we give is all whales are mammals? No, canaries are mammals. And therefore, some canaries are not whales. Okay, so going through the rules, what's my middle term? What's that? Mammals? Is mammals distributed in at least one of the premises?
Yes.
Yes, it is. P2. What is my major term?
Whales.
Is it distributed?
Yeah.
So is it distributed in the premise? Its premise? Premise 1? It is. All whales. Okay, cool. What about my minor term? Canaries. Is it distributed in my conclusion?
No.
No, so I don't care if it's distributed or not up in my premise. Then we need, do we have two negative premises?
No.
No, so it passes that rule as well. I feel like I missed the rule in there. Nope, we got that. Nope, I got them. Okay. So, do we have rule four? Do we have a negative premise and an affirmative conclusion? I have a negative premise, right? P2, no canaries. But I have a negative conclusion, so I'm good. Passes rule four. Rule five, a valid syllogism cannot have two affirmative premises and a negative conclusion. Did I pass rule five? Do I have two affirmative premises? I do not. Right? So I passed rule five. Is this a valid argument?
Yes.
It is valid. So this one is a valid argument.
I have a problem with the word some in the conclusion.
Why is that?
Wouldn't that be better written, therefore no canaries are whales?
Exactly. I would prefer it that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Some means
right.
Less than
correct. All. I'm not talking, it's undistributed, right? So I'm only talking about part of that group. So, yeah, what happens
as part of the group aren't whales.
Yes, part of the group are not any part of the whales group.
Correct.
So, does that really tell me a whole lot about canaries?
No.
No, it only tells me about some of the group of canaries, which is largely not helpful. So one of the things they will say, modern logicians, even in those 24 forms that they say are valid, they don't want any of the conclusions to have a particular like that. So they even take out some of those valid ones and say, because it doesn't really tell me anything. I mean, it's an argument, sure, it's valid, sure, but it doesn't really tell me anything conclusive. So what's the point of even wasting your time doing all this when you come to a conclusion that, I mean, a child could have told you that. You know, a little kid could have told me that some canaries are not whales.
And the implication is that then some are whales.
It could be. Well, it leaves the possibility. It's not implying that it has to be, but it's implying that it's possible still. And again, why? I've argued nothing at this point. So, but it's safe. And the reason why is that's a safe argument. If I just say some canaries are not whales, well, I'm right. I win that part. But I'm also not saying too much. So where...
less than all canaries.
Correct.
Are whales.
Yes. I'm saying at least part of the canaries out there are whales, which leaves the door open for me. So this would go back to like the originals only sort of arguments where Christians said the original autographs were inspired by God.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Can I prove them wrong?
No.
Why not? Or if I say the original autograph said da 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 da, can anyone prove me wrong? No, because we don't have the originals, so nobody can look at the originals and see if I'm right or wrong. So if I can find inspiration just to the originals, I might be right that the originals were inspired, but I also leave the possibility open for maybe stuff today is inspired or preserved or maybe it's not. I can move as people will attack me. So, yes, it might be true that the originals were inspired, but it's not very helpful because we can't prove if they are or aren't or whatever because they don't exist anymore. So, this is like, so yeah, some canaries are not whales is kind of, yes, that's true, some canaries are not whales, that's a true statement, but it leaves the door open to all kinds of other possibilities where I don't really get a good conclusion.
It seems like a false statement to me.
Right. I mean, it's definitely true. If I say some canaries are not whales, is that true?
It's true.
If I just had one canary and I said this particular canary is not a whale, is that a true statement?
Yes, but not as precise as it could.
Right. You're not talking about just one canary.
Well, yeah, I could have a cage of just canaries and say these canaries are not whales. Well, I'm not saying anything about the canaries that are down in the Amazon or something like that, but these particular canaries are not whales. Well, yeah, that's true, but I'm really just, it's an argument where I'm trying to like hedge my bet a little bit so that I don't have to say too much. Politicians are great at this. This is a very way to argue politically. This is a way you would do that. Is you try to make sure your conclusions are particular rather than universal, because it's a lot easier to defend our particular position than a universal position. Alright, so we see right away that the conclusion is negative in this example. This means one of the premises has to be negative as well, which the minor premise is. So here's an example of breaking the rule of five. So we need all whales, we're going to change this up, are sea creatures. Alright, and then we have some sea creatures are, where are we, warm-blooded animals. Oh, geez. So, therefore, no warm-blooded animals are whales. Okay, so, in this example, we go through it again. What is my middle term?
Sea creatures.
Sea creatures. Is sea creatures distributed in either premise?
Yes.
Yes.
All whales?
No, it's not.
It is not distributed. So does it break rule one?
No,
it breaks rule one. Okay, so rule two, what is my major term? Whales. Is whales distributed in the conclusion? Yes, it is.
Yes.
Is it distributed in its premise?
Yes.
It is. No warm-blooded animals. Is warm-blooded animals, that's my minor, is that distributed in the conclusion?
No.
It is?
Oh, it is.
Is it distributed in its conclusion? Or in its premise, sorry. It is not. So we've actually broken that rule as well. So this breaks rule one. And it has an illicit minor. Alright, what's the next rule? Cannot have two negative premises. Do we have two negative premises? No, we don't. So it's fine with rule three. Rule four, cannot have a negative premise in an affirmative conclusion. We don't have a negative premise, so we're fine on rule four. Rule five, if it cannot have two affirmative premises in a negative conclusion. So do we have two affirmative premises in a negative conclusion? We do, so we also break rule five. So this one actually breaks one, two, and five. So, next page, when rule five, this rule is broken in a syllogism, it is called, again, another really creative one, two affirmative premises and a negative conclusion. Fallacy. Real catchy. You remember those ones pretty easy, I'm sure. Yeah, right? Very, very creative. Somebody can come up with some more creative ones for these. That way we can refer to them easier. That's a mouthful. The fallacy of two affirmative premises and a negative conclusion. All right, so summary. In testing by rules, there are five rules to keep in mind. If a syllogism breaks just one rule, it's an invalid argument. If it passes all five, it is necessarily valid, but not necessarily true. If we go back to the whole truth thing, just because it's valid does not make it automatically true. What do I need for an argument to be sound or true? It has to be valid, and the two premises have to be true. So if the two premises are true and it's a valid argument, then it necessarily follows the conclusion is true and it is sound. So there are two rules that involve distributing terms. The middle must be distributed in at least one of the premises, and if a term is distributed in the conclusion, it must be distributed in its premise that it occurs. So that is rule one and two are about distributed terms. The last three rules involve the quality of the statement. A valid syllogism cannot have two negative premises, it cannot have a negative premise with an affirmative conclusion, and it cannot have two affirmative premises and a negative conclusion. So talking about the quality of our statements in those terms. So, any questions before we get to this last section? Alright, so establishing conclusions then. So last week we practiced putting statements from a blog that we were reading into an argument before determining if the reasoning was valid. So establishing conclusions is the positive formation of an argument and consists of four steps. So before we even get to those four steps, in the example from last week where we read that paragraph and then we tried to build arguments off of what was being claimed, how we're going to find a conclusion statement. Now remember, there were buzzwords, right? We had some buzzwords, you know, obviously in conclusion or therefore or words like that kind of clue us in, but what if they're not using words like that? Maybe, you know, they just say some things. What I do is I ask a question, which is, what is this person trying to get me to agree with? What are they trying to tell me I need to believe? That's what I'm going to look for when I see a conclusion, is what is this person's point that they're trying to get me to agree with them? And then you can look for those buzzwords. Once I think I found what the conclusion is, all right, step number one then is I put that statement to be established into a categorical form, which we did, and determine what type it is, an A, E, I, O, or O sort of statement. Okay? So I find what I think their conclusion is. Then I go over and I try to stick it into a categorical statement and determine what letter it is. Then I need to go to my valid argument. So from the next page, I put your valid 24 arguments on there. So I find the conclusion, and if I look at those 24 valid points, which letter is representative of the conclusion? The third letter, right? So let's say, we had the earlier one. This was from a real example as well. The King James Bible is the Word of God. All right, so what type of statement is this? A, E, I, or O?
A.
It is an A. It's kind of an understood, it's like that understood U in English. We haven't understood all King James Bible is the Word of God. So, in that example, the King James Bible is the Word of God, I have an A statement. Okay, A. So I look at that list, and I got to find any valid argument that has a third letter of A, because that's my conclusion letter. So of that list, how many end with A?
One.
Just one. So if I want to make a valid argument out of this statement, which form do I have to choose?
AAA rated.
That's it. AAA number one. So if I go to build a valid argument off this statement, I'm going to have to use an AAA one. So that already tells me how this is going to somewhat look. I know it has to be an AAA, and I know it has to be figure one. So then I know this is going to be an all, S is or RP, and then all S is or RP. So I already know that. And then I already know a couple of the terms. The Word of God is my major. So if I'm in a figure one, that means my middles are going to be here. So my middle and middle. So this is going to be Word of God. And then this is going to be King James Bible. And I got to come up with one more term. Okay, so I already know all that. So that's what this is going through. So, number one, we put it into categorical, which is this. All King James Bible is the Word of God. Two, I found the form, AAA1. That's the one I have to find. Number three, place the conclusion in the selected form of the syllogism and fill in the known terms, leaving the middle blank. And then four, my last step is now I need to find a middle term. So that makes the premise true, thus completing the argument. Now, in the example from a while ago, it was all books having numerological miracles. So we'll just put number of miracles and number of miracles. Now, this was this individual's argument. I didn't supply that middle term that was supplied in the body of their work. So, if we were just to assess this now, King James Bible, well, let's see, is our middle term distributed in at least one premise? It is. First premise, is our major term distributed in the conclusion? It is not distributed, so do I care if it's distributed in the premise? No. Is my minor term distributed? It is. Is it distributed in the premise? It is. Is it two negative premises?
No.
No. Is it a negative premise with a negative conclusion? No. So this passes all five of the rules. That's why this is a valid form. So when I constructed this, you can see it follows all five of those rules we just talked about, and that's how I'm going to build an argument. So I find that conclusion, and I know everything but the middle term. And I know what form to put it in, so I know exactly what the argument's going to look like. Now, with the two examples from last week, we were able to make an AAA1, which was valid. We weren't able to make a second valid argument. It didn't follow all the rules. And the reason why is we didn't try to construct it bad, because they gave us the bad statements. So they already supplied the statements they wanted in here, and we weren't able to construct a valid argument with it. Because one of their statements didn't go with the statement of the conclusion. So, if all we have is the conclusion, we can hopefully construct a valid argument for them or for ourselves. But sometimes not. So those are the four steps. Like I said, I would add another step and just say, how do you get that conclusion? You got to look for those buzzwords or try to ask the question, what are they trying to prove to me? And then if I have support statements in their premises, I ask, what does this person say to either prove or support that conclusion? And then I'll fill those terms in with those statements. So that's basically how we're going to do, like what we did 2 weeks ago, or last week when we looked at that real life example. We said, okay, we could see some statements already there. We don't have to make them because they made them already for us. What one is the conclusion? What one's in support? Build the argument. We found one was invalid based on the statement they had given us. The other one, we were able to construct a valid argument, which was great, because then now we can engage with a valid argument. So, we are pretty much out of time for more examples. So is there any questions on that? Is it starting to come together a little better on how this stuff works? A little bit? It is complicated, I get it. So, if you look at those 24 valid forms, there's two things. Modern logicians reject every figure four, saying that it's a useless form. Anything with a figure four, they say, is useless today. For whatever reason, it's kind of like that, well, some canaries are not whales. That's just not useful. It just doesn't help. And then, so they also say, as well as all universal premises with a particular conclusion, which is what we said. If we have an all, and then none, and then a some not, that's just useless. So, what Mike pointed out, modern logicians also agree. If I have a statement, and then, let's say, an E statement, I got two universals. All S is P, no S is P, and then I get to my conclusion and I throw up an O statement where I'm just saying some canaries are not whales. Modern logicians say anything that follows that pattern is pretty much stupid. It's not even worth saying it's valid. Sure, it's technically valid, but who cares? So, those 24 are all valid, but they might not all be useful in trying to ascertain truth. Is basically what modern logicians are saying today.